The Short Game is listener-supported on Patreon. If you'd like to support the show and join us on our Discord, head to theshortgame.net or patreon.com/theshortgame.
Welcome back to The Short Game, a show about short video games, games that respect your time. My name is Nate Heininger, and I am joined this week by two killer co-hosts.
Lauren Nash.
And Shane Kelly.
Nice. And this week we're mixing it up a little bit. We've had a bit of a sudden change to the schedule, but you know, that doesn't mean we're not constantly still out there playing video games. And we've had a couple games that we've been really wanting to talk about on the show, but haven't really found some space for it. So this is going to be a little bit of a grab bag, round table sort of thing.
Super long game, super short game, somewhere in between.
Somewhere in between, you know? So hopefully, you know, I know I'm looking forward to chatting about a game in particular. And I think we've got some fun stuff to talk about today. So why don't we just dive right in? We've mentioned this game like 10 times already in the last like 6 months or so on the show. And Shane, I know you've been playing it as well. But
absolutely.
I rolled credits on Super Mario Wonder just a few nights ago. Now, I've been playing this with my kids, which is a particularly unique way to play it. But before we get into the game itself, I was curious, have either of you two played a lot of the 3D side-scrolling Mario games?
Back when we got the Wii, that was the Super Mario's 3D 2D, that was what was selling multiple controllers. And it was the weekend we were looking for apartments in Chicago and we're crashing on various friends' apartments. So it was just, we would show up to a friend's apartment for the night with a copy of the game and extra controllers in our suitcase, pop it in, play, and then we go to the next house you were couch surfing on. It was just like, look for apartments all day, play Super Mario together all night until we all fell asleep together, like little puppies in a pile, and then go look at apartments the next day. A real mature way to be in your 20s, worked for
sounds
us.
Wonderful.
Oh, it was wonderful. If we ever do a short con, that's what I expect it to be, except without the apartment searching.
Yeah, well, why not? We'll throw in.
I have played some of the 2D scrollers for Mario. The thing about these games is it's gone from being the mainline Mario to just being gone to being kind of like sideline Mario. Mm-hmm. And there were, on various handhelds, mainly the Super Mario Bros. The new Super Mario Bros. Games. Yeah. And so new Super Mario Bros. U Deluxe was the most recent of those that I had played, which is an absolutely god-awful title that speaks to
great game,
confusion.
Terrible title.
Yeah, it is. It could, it is
when
a
everything
really
folds in on itself, when your naming becomes like you have to include the fact that it's new, and then they want to include the console that it's on, and everything just becomes word
new
salad.
Kind of became sort of the series signifier for those. And I think the first one was on the 3DS or the DS. Yeah. Anyway.
Thinking long-term when you add new into the title of your game franchise.
Well, I guess that each one is new at a certain time, at least until new Super Mario Bros. U Deluxe. Which was for the Switch.
Once they attached 3D to the Switch, to the DS 3D, the 3DS, then it just became horrible because I could never call anything 3D again.
I did really love, I mean, we did a whole episode on it, the Super Mario 3D World that came to the Switch with that Bowser's Fury add-on. That whole thing is fantastic. That
Cats?
Probably is my favorite Mario game in many, many years. But the one we're discussing today has maybe eclipsed that in my in this very specific niche of Mario game as family game, which is what I think that this new one has really, Super Mario Wonder really hits that very, very well.
Yeah, it's really targeting it, I think. Laura, like you, I have a very specific period in my life tied to the new Super Mario Brothers for the Wii. I had a Wii, and it was at a time when I lived with several roommates, and we played through the entire game four player, and yeah. It is honestly one of my favorite gaming experiences of my life, mostly because that particular version of the game, I think that one in the sequel had two things that they have removed from the series, which I think is at the series' detriment, though I do understand. One is that in those games, the two characters could not maintain the same space, mm-hmm. which is hilarious in a platformer, especially when, you know, it's Mario, and a lot of later level Mario platforming is you're landing on Mario-sized blocks, and so only one person could be on it at a time and trying to navigate everybody getting to them and getting through more complicated levels was hilarious and challenging. And you also could pick someone up and throw them yes. without their consent, which when you're playing with your friends is a lot of fun.
And then the trapped in the bubble animation, when someone uh-huh. dies, they float up in a bubble and they are trapped and they are not happy to be trapped in this bubble. And yeah. that is arguably the best thing, when your friend is yelling at you because you threw them into a lava pit. Just
and
have
now
a little,
they're bubbled. Yeah. Well, and so they've gotten rid of
later games, that bubble. The character that's in a bubble no longer seems quite so distressed as they did. And that was good because it kind of resold the, like, I'm needing to be carried through this level aspect for my son as Mario using his bubble powers. Which, yeah, a little bit of a better sell than, like, I'm trapped and
I
being
hate this.
Held
I don't know. In
void.
Wonder, it's like they are swimming through, like, desperately swimming towards revival. And if there's a clock on it, or else you lose a life when you're in that bubble. So they have replaced it with a little bit of a, it's still panicked, but a little less panicked than before. But I love the series. I love all side-scrolling Mario's, either the older ones and even the new ones. There hasn't been one that I haven't liked. I think I've liked some of them more than the others, but I just ultimately loved the series and was incredibly excited for Wonder and yeah. have finally been able to play through the whole thing.
I mm-hmm. think about 50% of Justin's time watching Twitch is watching Mario Maker, and a lot of those are 3D levels. And so I think I was super primed for Wonder. Of course, all of those kaiju level players ripped through Wonder in one day and were yeah. like, this is very easy, and move back to their levels. But the one day I watched Wonder was a treat. And I have not been able to justify buying this, as I didn't beat you Deluxe, but I also really want to buy it. So I can't wait for you two to persuade me to put this in my cart mm-hmm. as soon as the episode ends.
Yeah, you mentioned Mario Maker. It's funny. So Mario and side-scrolling Mario, it's in my all-time favorite franchise. I love them all, and I play them frequently, and I'll go back. Yeah. I played all the way through Mario 3 again relatively recently.
What's your top Mario game? Is it 3?
It's 3.
That's my mm-hmm. favorite, yeah.
Yeah. You want to get cute sometimes and be like, no, it's actually, you know, but it's 3. Mm-hmm. I think if you said Super Mario World for Super Nintendo, like, you know, that's some people's favorite, and that's cool,
yeah.
too.
It's a very close tie for me between yeah. 3 and Super Mario Galaxy and
the
original
version.
Super Mario World. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and Mario Maker, you would, like, that seems like something that I would love, but I have this weird, like, mental block. It's the same reason, like, I never really want to read fan fiction either. I want it from the source. And I'm content to wait for from the creators, you know, and I don't really feel the need to, like, fill the gap with fan-made content, even though I know that there's some incredible fan-made content in Mario Maker. I don't have a drive for it. I don't know what it is.
You want the Nintendo guarantee of safety and fun.
I guess.
And that is not available yeah. in Mario Maker for sure.
Yeah, I guess. I know I've seen some really, really well-regarded full games in Mario Maker. Mm-hmm. There was that one that got some real press a little while ago. I forget what it's called, but it was like a full Mario. Somebody, you know, with all
the one that was worlds. Intro level. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I just haven't had that desire. I'm content to wait for the actual games from the studio. And I'm certainly glad that I picked up Wonder. Shane, what has your been your sort of thoughts playing this game?
And so there's a lot of like fantastic improvements on a very, very old formula in Wonder. I think there's nothing that I liked quite as much that they changed in Wonder as the animations. Mm-hmm. Like the Mario games have had, like even in the 3D ones, pretty plain and pretty kind of static animation for, you know, your for Mario. But this one has thrown out a lot of that. In fact, there were, I would say through all of those like new Super Mario Brothers games, they, if they changed it even like a hair's pixels width on any of the character animations, then it would have, I didn't notice it. But in this one, they redid everything in a really cutesy and clever way. And Mario just really looks like he did on the packaging for mm-hmm. games going all the way back to like Super Mario 3. Mm. So that's probably my favorite thing about it. And then an emphasis on secrets is the other thing that I like. This game, although the secrets are not like deeply hidden, because I do think the game is kind of aimed at the kind of emerging fan. Mm-hmm. The fact that there that each level does have like a secret with a great payoff in it, kind of built into the structure of the game, is also brilliant. Those are the two things that I love the most.
Yeah, on the animation, like there's so much flavor now and so much vibrancy added. Like even just Mario or whoever you are, you can play 8 or 9 characters.
Mm-hmm.
They all have these incredibly unique and varied going down tube animations. You know, sometimes they're like hopping down. Sometimes they're like kind of crawling down the tube. One of my favorite ones is if you're going into a horizontal tube, sometimes like I play as Luigi a lot, his hat falls off as he's going through and he reaches out and grabs his hat and pulls it back in as he's going through. And like little things like that, that like really just add this real charm to the game that I don't think we really got a lot of that. And the backgrounds are incredibly vibrant. You've got little singing and dancing flowers all over the place that are tied to the music, which is a ton of fun. Though the flowers speak English a lot, which felt very strange, and so Molly and I changed it to Japanese just because it just felt more right. Instead of having these little flowers talking to us the whole time, we switched it. Shane, I agree completely. The character of the world is unlike any of these games that we've seen in the past. Mm-hmm. And then that does tie into, you know, you called it the secrets. It really is like a fundamental part of the game now, is that there's a hidden, a wonder seed that will, when you find it, you enter in sort of almost like a bonus stage. That is a stage within a stage that will fundamentally change whatever, you know, something about the world that's in front of you. So, you know, one of the, a simple one is that once you gather it, the entire world goes into that sort of silhouetted thing that, you know, I think is a reference to Mario 2, like when you would go through the doors in the Nintendo Mario 2 game and everything is sort of blacked out. And now you have to do the whole level with everything kind of blacked out, like shadowed, and it just is really cool looking and really interesting. Or you may completely change shape and turn into like, there's these like weird little goo balls that can climb on the walls and you have to do the whole level that way. Or
I really liked the one where you turned into a Goomba and every different playable character, and there's a lot, has a different Goombified version of themselves.
That's funny.
And
you go giant, you when get you're tiny.
A Goomba, you can't jump, and you're small.
Yeah.
Every level has some unique wonder thing. Some of them repeat slightly with a twist, but almost every level, and there are quite a few levels, has something totally unique and surprising. Like, really, this is the game. Like, it's a game full of Mario levels that each kind of has its own unique mini game in it, and that's like brilliant.
Yeah, yeah, that's something you cannot get from Mario Maker. Well, yeah, you can, but only very, very few levels, and they're all super hard.
Well, and this has that Nintendo polish. I mean, the transitions are all beautiful. Everything just feels smooth. You're like, ooh, what's it going to be? You know, and it's almost always some sort of satisfying change. It really, you know, that they call it wonder, I think, pretty apt. It does feel like a sort of a wonderful moment whenever the whole world changes and now you're playing it like a fundamentally different stage than you were before. It's a really cool mechanic. It's cool enough that it makes me wonder if the next one will be like Wonder 2 and they'll just keep this as a thing in Mario games for a little while, because I really enjoyed it, and I think it seems to have been pretty well received.
And who doesn't want another Drug Trip Mario game?
Yeah. And they did some really, speaking of drug trip aspects, this is an extremely bizarre psychedelic experience. which has always been true for Mario, but maybe particularly so here. Mario games have a precious little story. Yeah. Or character to them. But this one is trying to have more than the usual. Nate alluded to the little flowers everywhere that actually talk to you with, you know, full voice acting, which is, I think, as yet fairly unheard of in a Mario game.
Yeah.
But this one, it really kind of starts off with a really weird bang. Like, it starts off with the Flower Kingdom, which is a neighbor to the Mushroom Kingdom, and the royal family is having a little visit there, and so you see the little flower people who are, you know, kind of like the Toads but with flowers on their heads, and well, what do you know, here comes Bowser, and he's trying to do his Bowser stuff, and he gets one of these wonder flowers, and you know, this is typical. I've seen Bowser steal some weird power up before and get super. But this time, he turns into a building and a big flying, floating castle, which, you know, it's pretty clear straight from the start. That's the final kind of world of the game, is Bowser as a building.
Mm-hmm.
So that's great. So the other kind of standout character here, if you want to call him that, is the prince, who is a... he's the prince of the Flower Kingdom, and he's a teeny tiny caterpillar who's totally adorable, and he sits on your shoulder and pops out and says things every now and then, and he's also tied to a very new mechanic for a Mario game here, that what they call badges, which are ways to kind of customize Mario's ability. So this is a new thing for the 2D Mario games. There's 20 or 30 odd collectible badges that you can pick one at the start of the level, and they do things like change how your jump works, or let you puff your hat up into a big paraglider, or all sorts of different things. Some of them do things that are kind of more or less familiar from different Mario games, like the some past Mario games had like a crouch charge jump that you could do. Mm-hmm. Well, it's not back here. It hasn't been back in a Mario game in 20 years, but it is here if you get the right badge. You know, there's like a fast swimming badge, all sorts of different things. There's a lot of these. These give you a lot of control over how you're going to tackle the game, and they're probably more fun as a collectible item than just about anything else that I've played with in Mario, because they do have a real direct impact on the game. And if you're concerned at all about which one to choose, the prince will recommend one for you. So, I really liked that aspect of it. I like the prince. He's very cute. I think his badge system was good.
Point counterpoint. Molly and I found Prince Flavian or whatever to be the worst part of the game.
system, actually, the prince is terrible.
Yeah, the prince is annoying, but the badge system is great. I really like that, being able to choose what individual augment you want. And did you have a favorite one that you used the most?
Interesting. Shane? You dislike royalty, and yet you participate in his upgrade system.
Mm-hmm. Down with the monarchy.
Give me more powers.
In all cases, the Flower Kingdom. You know. I think we need to get the guillotines out in the Flower Kingdom, I guess is what I'm saying. But yeah, did you have an upgrade that you liked the most?
You know, I would change around a lot. I personally, kind of an off-key one, but I guess I really like the swimming one because I've always hated tedious water levels in Mario games. And being able to dolphin kick was very, very good.
I still have the video you sent from years ago of your child crying about the water level saved to my phone.
Yeah, it's such a weird thing. Like,
it sent it to me as a memory. It was like, remember a couple of years ago, this video? It's like, this is not my child, but thank you.
The hat makes it way better. It is funny that like the Mario underwater levels... like have not fundamentally changed at all. Like you still feel the same type of swimming, the same type of behavior, and yet across the board, it is everyone's like least favorite thing. But I wonder if we would miss it if it were gone. You know, there must be some degree of Nintendo genius here to keep it in the games, because we all, I don't know of anyone. I'm sure there are people out there. If you are one of these people. One of these masochists, let us know. But you know, I'm sure there are people who love the underwater levels, but for the most part, everyone's like, ah, damn it, another water level. But the dolphin kick badge does help. I liked the vine whip badge. Gives you a horizontal like whip that will grab onto the wall or really any surface and pull you forward. So you can, you know, if you miss a jump, you could... quick enough, you could vine whip it and catch the wall and sort of save yourself. And it was really good for grabbing the top of the tower, the top of the flagpole at the end of the levels.
Mm-hmm. So overall, I think this game really sets a new bar for how good a 2D Mario should look. But if I have one critique of it, I think... so I loved playing this game with my son. He is a new emerging Mario fan. He loved the movie. You know, he's all in on Mario. Mm-hmm. Although he did really discover he liked playing as Blue Yoshi a lot because, hey, Yoshi is his favorite color now. And also...
Yoshi is his favorite color?
Blue Yoshi is blue, which is his
that
favorite color.
That makes more sense, yes.
Yeah, it's like, and... Yoshi's my favorite color, too. That's a great color choice.
And, you know, it works. It worked really well for us because, we, you know, by the way, the Yoshis and also the Nabbit character, who I will never understand, are immune to damage from enemies. So really, really good for a kid. Yes. And he loved being able to carry me around on his back, him being Yoshi and me being Mario. So that's fantastic. Playing... with the whole family, great. If you are a solo Mario fan, right, this is not a Mario game that is made for the person who like really loved like Super Mario World and has played every hardcore platformer since then and is looking for a challenge. The game is pretty easy. I don't know how hard you and Molly found it, but like, I think there was not a level on here that I couldn't beat on my first try if I was trying my hardest. I wasn't. I was playing at the level of like shepherding a 6-year-old.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, we have pretty similar experiences. You know, I do like the game now tells you on the level what its projected difficulty is. There's a star system, so like 1 star, 2 star, 3, and 4. And then the very last level is 5 stars difficulty. And some of the 4-star ones, you could see there was a little bit more of a complicated nature to the level, but from a challenging standpoint, not really. There was early on, there was a 4-star badge challenge that I think I talked about on the episode that I found uniquely challenging, and it actually gave me hope that these 4-star levels were going to be actually like really hard Mario levels, mm-hmm. and they were telling you it was 4-stars so you could avoid it with your kids. But we ended up playing them all. And yeah. I was shepherding not only a 6-year-old, we had our 3.5-year-old playing. And she doesn't even, you know, she was, by the end, she could move to the right and jump. But a lot of it was just us, like, sort of really coaxing her forward and everything. And we played literally the entire game with a 3.5-year-old mm-hmm. just sort of being dragged along, dying over and over. And you know, she was a Yoshi, but you could still fall into holes and stuff like yep. that. But she had a great time. And mm-hmm. my 6.5-year-old, who actually does play video games and enjoys it, you know, she was able to. There were a couple times where, like, through circumstances, we would all die, and it'd be up to her to sort of like move forward, and she was able to do that. So, I do agree with you, Shane. I do think it's geared towards more that type of play style, though. Being as big of a Mario fan as I
enjoy it, yeah, anyone would probably enjoy it, but will you find it challenging? Right, because
the
delight of this game is in the surprise of mm-hmm. it, right?
I don't think I need it to be hard. I need it to be fun. Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. What is this seed going to do to the world, and what am I going to get to do because of this is fun. I mean, and there's some really cool and really sort of like magical things that happen, you know, with, it plays with space where you're like getting into these really big map types and like flying and all sorts of different stuff that like I didn't really feel like I had done in a Mario game before. It makes it, not that they were grounded in reality in any capacity before, but it really allowed them to kind of just do whatever they wanted on each level.
Yeah, every one of these could have been the gimmick that they stretched out over like 2 or 3 levels or a whole world in mm-hmm. a past Mario game. They really are just throwing every idea in on this game, which is, it's really wonderful to see. It's very generous in its design. Like, it comes up with all these ideas and it doesn't linger on one of them for long. I guess the closest thing you have to ideas that are like really fully fleshed out would be with the new power-ups, which we haven't mentioned. I absolutely mm-hmm. adore Elephant Mario.
Hmm.
So there's Elephant Mario is the one on the box. Elephant Mario, not only is Mario like bigger than ever, he's got a trunk that he can use and swing around and smash stuff. He's so big and bulky, he can just crash through lots of things. And on top of that, there's a kind of fun, almost hidden mechanic. It's not too well explained right away, but then you kind of explore it as you go, where Elephant Mario can carry water in his trunk and use it to revive flowers, turn lava to stone, a lot of little different things like that. So Elephant Mario, fantastic, really funny looking, great. Yes.
Elephant Mario elephant riding versions on Yoshi
of the other characters as well. Elephant Peach, fantastic.
Yeah.
And then I also just really enjoyed some of the other quirky new power-ups. Like, there's a Bubble Mario, and Bubble Mario is, you know, it's like, so there's the Fire Flower you've used before. The Bubble Flower lets you kind of shoot bubbles, but shoots these large bubbles that can grab enemies or coins or other things. And kind of most fun, you can jump on the bubbles, so you can shoot the bubbles out and then kind of get a running start and jump and bounce on them to jump great distances.
And people have
tricky enough that it's really good.
People have done some cool stuff with this too, because you can like fire out a couple of bubbles and then bounce across them. So I watched a speed run of a level that it was like game breaking, the amount of the world that they were able to skip by just briefly touching land enough to fire off a couple more bubbles and then bounce across them. It was really cool.
Nice.
So yeah, I think, you know, Shane and I both absolutely loved this game. I do think, you know, we went at it from like a family bent, which is, you know, I think a good lens for this game. But I've gone back and played by myself too a little bit, because it's fun to play with your kids, but you definitely, you know, I love these games so much. And I'm like, I also want to like.
I didn't want to play it without my son, because I didn't want to like be like, oh, sorry, daddy beat the game while you were asleep.
Well, it's separate save file, and I played behind. You know what I mean? Like we would do the worlds together, and then I'd sometimes go back on my own save file and be like, all right, now I'm going to actually, like, quote unquote, 100% this game. You know, like, oh, you know, we weren't going for all the big purple coins as a group, or, you know, you miss certain things. And so I'm going back and trying to get them all and really, you know, see the full game. But I know we're like 6 months late on this as far as when the game came out. But if you're out there and you're still thinking whether you should play it or not,
me,
you know, we absolutely loved it. And it is a short game, you know.
Nice.
You obviously, your mileage may vary depending on how much of the game you want to play. It has, like a lot of the Marios have for a while, you don't even have to do all of the stages, although I don't know why you wouldn't. You know, like, Mario is for playing Mario, so why skip stages? But you can, you sort of unlock the worlds collecting these seeds, and you don't need all of them to get to every level. But I think, you know, would highly recommend this game.
Nice.
Laura, what have you been playing?
Oh, I mostly have been playing stuff for the show, but I've been playing way too many things, like, every day. Not Wordle, but no offense to Wordle folks. I fell off that a while back. But my sister still texts me when the word is hard, which is a clue in itself, and I try to tell her not to do that, because if she texts me because the word is hard, I know it's not a normal word, and then I beat her, and then she pouts.
Yeah.
Shout out to my sister who doesn't listen. But besides Learned League, which is a trivia league I am a part of, there are a lot of daily websites that will give you a new game every day in a style. I've mentioned a lot one off here for making me happy, but several of them have stuck around, especially if you like movie trivia. I used to play Framed, which was they gave you a series of images that get increasingly obvious for a movie, and you need to guess. You can skip, but you get to guess. And the early ones are hard enough that, for example, a couple days ago, they had West Side Story, a movie I have seen probably 25 times, and I needed 3 pictures to get it. But I also have, I was like, because it's set in New York, and a lot of movies are set in New York.
It's so, the fifth character.
It is. But besides Framed, I think the one that I'm most excited about recently is there is a game called Movie Grid, and Vulture spun off a version called Cinematrix. But the idea is it's just a table, and you have names on one side or an attributes on the other. So it might be like Gwyneth Paltrow, $100 million movie, Jake Gyllenhaal. And then you basically have to fill in the grid with movies that fit each one. But the scoring, and this is where it gets fun, is what's the rarest movie you can name that fits the two? And you can also use each block once. So if you put Death Proof in one, you can't put in another.
Mm-hmm. This is like spread. Mm. I don't know where. I first saw it in sports. It was called Immaculate Grid. And it would be like one side would be like, you know, Boston Red Sox, MVP winner. You know, struck out 200 people in a game, or a game in a season, and then like a similar thing across the top, and you have to find a player that fits those two descriptors, and then there's a rarity score as well. Those things are a ton of fun.
Yeah, the Movie Grid website, I think the one that Vulture hosts, Cinematrix, is more polished. They do one a day, and the rarity score is more fun to compete on. But the OG Movie Grid, the same people do both. Just they got paid to skin it for a newspaper. Has off script where they have directors. They have a TV grid for TV shows, and then they also have a classic one where it's all old stuff. And that one gets incredibly hard. There was one that I opened that was must have just been blaxploitation movies, and I was like, look, I can name 4 blaxploitation yeah. movies, and I can't reliably put any of these in the grid. Man, it's good because it is both a under 5-minute task, and also you feel like you should be doing better on it, so you have yeah. like you want to come back later in the day or hold your guess until you've thought about it.
Well, and it becomes like a bragging rights thing too if you can snag one that you have like an insane rarity score. Like at least in the sports one, you know, people are always trying to find, like on baseball, you're trying to find like this guy played in 1912, you know, and it's a rarity score of like 0.1% or something like that.
But sometimes your brain breaks, and I yes. couldn't think of a Colin Farrell movie between 2002 and 2020 because every movie I could think of was before 2004 or after 2020. And I was like, this man must have acted in a movie during that decade, and I could not for the life of me think of anything between Batman and Phone Booth. So those are Cinematrix, Movie Grid, and Framed. There's also Cine 2 Nerdle, which is like the New York Times connection wall for movies, where you have to come up with sets of movies within a grid.
Yeah.
And then if anyone wants to do an actual trivia league, I do Learned League, and I have not recommended anybody, but you have to promise daily not to cheat. So don't yeah. wreck my reputation if I give you a Learned League recommendation.
Wow. I do love how, like, similar to the Mario games we were just talking about, like all these games, the naming of it has like so wrapped around on itself that everyone's mm-hmm. like trying to reference Wordle. So you get Erdle in like a million game that doesn't mm-hmm. make any sense.
Yeah, I have played a few of those, and like there was one that that was trying to guess a magic card, and it was like impossible.
Oh, no. I played one impossible. Today that just gives you the outline of a country, and you have to guess the country, and then it gives you an accuracy.
Too.
was very challenging. It gives you your accuracy is based off of the distance from the country that you guessed to the country that it is, and then a little arrow pointing in the direction. So you'd guess something, and it would be like, you're off by 4,000 kilometers
wow.
east. You know? And yeah, it turns out, like, I don't know. I can name... There's definitely some countries that I know what their shapes are, and I can identify them pretty quickly, but not most. So it gets pretty hard.
Learned League tells you how you do in different categories, and I have learned that I am an adult who does not know geography. I have incredibly high theater, film, TV, basically all the things that require sitting at your house, but the ones that require leaving it, all at the bottom.
So. I just immediately go blank at all times on any of these sorts of games. Like, I like them, but especially the grid ones, like you were saying, it'll be just something that I know for sure. But for whatever reason, you give me these two qualifiers, and I'm just like, I'm frozen. My brain is broken. I don't know anything anymore. Get this away.
Well, if it was like guess the short game, then we'd all do fine. But like, maybe I do fine on Wordle.
Debatable.
Because it's like it's like the, you know, I grew up getting spelling words drilled into my brain academically.
Now, but those are arguably more like of a logic puzzle anyway, because you can
process almost, of elimination.
Now I really want to make a trivia game for our 400th episode.
Ooh, we are trying to figure out what we're gonna do for episode 400. So
well, if I write the trivia, I don't have to do it.
Hey, you've got like 2 weeks to write us a trivia game.
Well, it's coming up. It's creeping up on us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And I'm not really contributing to keeping the show afloat. Mostly I have been playing a lot of Helldivers.
Tell me more about Helldivers.
That's been a problem for my participation in the short game.
I know you missed Balatro, Shane game.
A game we recorded and then I played another 15 hours of, which is also what I've been doing instead of playing
I felt really
games.
Bad missing out on Balatro.
This could have been Balatro 2 if we wanted it to
100%,
be.
100%.
Super Earth needed me. So I did kind of briefly talk about Helldivers 2 already on the show, because it was one of my making me happy things, but that was close to a month ago, and this is there's a lot of things that I don't really dip my toe into that much happening with this game. So it had, when I last spoke about it, a kind of a very unusual launch story where the game, which, you know, we covered Helldivers 1 on the short game because it was, you know, of course we have the exception for roguelikes. We have historically had a small exception also for dual stick shooters, which Helldivers 1 is numbered among. But Helldivers 2 changed to being a third person shooter, kind of over the shoulder style perspective. I was ready to play that, and when it launched, no one could even load the game because it apparently became so popular so fast that the servers simply could not keep up. I think the first Helldivers had like 7,000 people playing it simultaneously maximum at one point, and like they've sold millions of copies of this, and they had, you know, hundreds of thousands of people trying to get in on the servers, hammering their servers. Well, they managed to kind of clean that up and clear that up over the course of about the first few weeks of February. So here we are at the start of March, and I don't know to what extent. I know, Nate, you've played like some Destiny and WoW and things like that, mm-hmm. but it's been a long time since I dipped my toe into the universe of like live service style games, mm-hmm. where the community becomes kind of an important part of the game, especially one where it's a cooperative game. So we've just come through the first major balance patch for Helldivers 2, and the game is great. It's in great shape, but you wouldn't know that if you logged into their official Discord or onto the subreddit for the game, you know, which is kind of reminding me of why I really treasure having a community of like-minded game players, such as yourselves. You know, if I want to complain about the balance of some game, I can do so to just a few people on this podcast and I guess to our listeners. And no one has to hear me become toxic. But, you know, putting all that stuff aside, which it really is just whack when you are really loving something and like clearly so are the people making it, and then all of us and then all these like random people on the internet are like, I don't see how they're not seeing that they're ruining their own game, blah blah blah. That's a tiny portion of it. Portion of the fan base, I think. But to keep my thoughts strictly on the game, it really is fantastic. It's, you know, beautiful to look at. The more I've played, the more different planets I've landed on, and every one of them has just a very cool aesthetic. You know, from airless moons to like purple jungle planets to, you know, planets covered in mushrooms with spore clouds so thick you can't see 10 feet in front of you. The selection of different, they call them stratagems, which are basically your different weapons and support items and airstrikes you can call in and orbital lasers that you can blast your enemies with. Just the weaponry is fantastic. And there's a lot of room to grow this game, I think. They have, they do a kind of a global challenge for the game. This is one of the things that I think is really clever and unique about the game. There's a galactic war that's represented by just sort of the galaxy map. And at all times, the enemy factions are attacking the different planets on this galactic map to try and expand their territory. And so when you complete missions, you're actually contributing a fraction of a percent to retake these various different planets. And they have, as an aspect of this, an actual game master who is part of steering kind of the story of this galactic war. And they're doing some really interesting things with that. There's a much anticipated addition to the game of mech suits that you can call in, right? Everyone wants the mech suits.
Who doesn't want it? Every game right. Everybody is wants improved. A mech
suit. Could they have just added these mech suits as like a new item in the shop? Yes. Could they have added these mech suits as part of a, you know, and they do have sort of a battle pass-esque thing that they call the war bond. They could have put it in there, but no, they made it a story element in the Galactic War where they say, hey, this planet has been overtaken by the automatons. The experimental suit is going to be created at, in our factories here. You've got to retake this planet and then it'll unlock the new mech suit for everybody. So
that's cool.
Yeah, I really love that aspect of the game. It's super cool. I'm still loving it. This is probably the last time I'll jabber on, or maybe not the last time I'll jabber on about it on the short game, because it really is not our style of game. But if you wonder where I am on any of the upcoming episodes, it's because I am battling it out on Malevolon Creek against the Terminids.
Well, it looks incredible, and it really does look right up my alley. I have loved games like that in the past, and I long for more Left 4 Dead style cooperative shooters. You know, that's one of my favorite games of all time. I was disappointed, although I understand why, because of the type of game that it is and just the perspective. But Helldivers 1 was a wonderful couch co-op game, and I'm always searching for another good couch co-op game. And this is not couch co-op, though it is co-op, and that was disappointing. Yep.
That's a big thing to give up. I think there's a lot of market reasons and sensible reasons why they made the shift to being a third-person game. It's definitely a genre that I think more people are comfortable with.
I get it.
But I regret that as well.
Yeah, I get it. So disappointing, but I will pick it up at some point, Shane, and I will play with you, I promise. I think we're gonna wrap it up there and just make this a nice little recap of things that we've been playing outside of the show. And we'll be back the following week with another game focus. Look for that the week after. And then after that, I think it's our 400th episode. So, wow.
Again, threatening to make a game.
I hope you. It's now recorded and going out on the feed that we've at least had this conversation. So if that's not some pressure on yourself, then I don't know what is. I can't wait to not remember, things that we did like 2 weeks ago, let alone things that we might have done 8 years ago.
It's going to be very anticlimactic that Reagan will have a complete index and never no one else will answer any questions.
That's going to do it for this.
If I could be a little timely, check out the big sale on the Playdate games. Big Playdate fans here. There's a lot going on right now on the Playdate catalog. So check out the big sale. They've got a Playdate Community Awards thing going on. So check it out.
Yeah. All right. So that'll wrap it up. Fun little grab bag episode. You can find links to everything for this show on shortgame.fm. That includes our Patreon. If you are interested in joining our little community and supporting the show, consider joining the Patreon. The show is entirely supported by listeners just like you. And we love our little community. That's where a lot of our game recommendations come. So if you have an idea for the show, you can hop in there, or you can find contact forms and all the different ways to contact us on shortgame.fm. We're trying a tighter exit to episodes now, so I think that's going to do it for this episode. I'm Nate Heininger.
Laura Nash.
And Shane Kelly.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Bye.